Entering the final 2 weeks of the CFL season, the Edmonton Eskimos in complete control of their destiny. They take on Saskatchewan, the worst team in the league, and then they take on the worst team in the East, Montreal, next weekend at home to wrap up their season. Opportunity to win out and host the West Final for the first time since 2003. Last time there was a Western Final in Edmonton. As we go inside the stripes with Bud Steen, 30 years as CFL official. Now he is in the evaluation booth for officials in Western Canada. Bud, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. You don't like my sweater?
No. Well, I don't know. Kind of reminds me of split pea soup.
What was the color? I see. All right. It's not the style.
It's the whole thing. Like that, Strudwick would be all over that. That's all I got to say. Like Strud's probably, I should take a picture and send it to him. And he would definitely be asking you. Like, Majot, you would agree? Like, this has got Struds written all over it.
Oh, yeah. That's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah.
It's just
It suits your age, bud. It doesn't really suit his age.
All right. Well, okay. I'll take it. I'll take that then as a compliment.
Yeah. You're all dressing to your style, to your age. It's totally fitting to you. But, yeah, it reminds me, like, Struds would, he'd be rocking that all day if he could.
Sorry. I got us off topic. Interesting stretch coming up for the Eskimos. They're definitely going to have to take some lessons from Saturday's game because they played out of character in that football game. Normally, the Eskimos are good for 10, 12 penalties a game.
It's 10.4. They are the lowest in the league.
True. And now they lay a goose egg of 18 penalties in one game and big ones like long returns pulled back and bad holdings and, just taking a lot of offense off of the board. You know, the guys have got to settle down. My sense is, and I'll chat with a few of them tomorrow, BC was throwing some stuff at them that maybe they weren't ready for. They hadn't seen, and it kind of got them off their game a little bit. So the guys were reaching, holding, grabbing, pulling, et cetera, where they wouldn't otherwise have been doing it. However, you know, at least for the Eskimos fans, it turned out to be a great Saturday afternoon. Very loud. Probably the loudest Commonwealth has been in years.
Now, there was one penalty in particular that, you know, it gets flagged as a penalty, but there's no yardage to it. It's when the BC Lions were on the one-yard line. Armando Sewell jumps offside and just hammers the centerman.
Yeah.
Right? Hammers BC center. On the next play, they fumble the ball. Now, that, it was first down and goal. And really, it's kind of like a free play there for Sewell. You can take that penalty because you can't get closer than 1 yard.
No, and so you get another first down. Big deal.
Yeah, exactly.
I suppose if he had hit him hard enough, he could have been tossed out of the game.
Sure.
But
pretty rare.
Pretty rare. Generally speaking, you only see things like that happen if somebody busts through the line early and pops the quarterback in the head or something like that. Then you might, an official may toss the player. But on that one, I'm not sure if that was his MO, but it certainly played out that way because next snap bounces
off
the quarterback's leg and into the goal. And who was that? Lacey that picked it up and ran it? Like, you know, big play.
Now, the reason I asked you about that play, as an official for so many years, did you see teams and defensive guys take advantage of that where they could take a penalty offside, you know, get kind of a free shot in knowing that it's really not penalizing them?
Not really.
Okay.
Because when you're embroiled in the heat of the moment, generally speaking, all of the adrenaline is firing in a different way. You're not necessarily thinking strategically. That would be very complex thinking. I doubt very much that a player would necessarily think that way. I didn't see it. Having said that, later in the game, I believe it was in overtime, and the Eskimos were spiking the ball. The BC nose tackle did exactly the same thing, only he went right underneath the center, and when Riley spiked the ball, he almost spiked it right into the hands of the BC nose tackle. So, I mean, that could have turned out to be quite interesting if it had hit him on the head or something and the ball bounced up. It was a live ball if it doesn't hit the ground. So,
Now, I do have a question that came in from one of our listeners. Why do you think the Eskimos didn't challenge the punt that was touched and they could have got a safety?
Interesting question, because while I was watching the game, I was alerting command center to quickly review the play, because it appeared to me that the ball had been touched as it passed the, I think it was Rainey that was back there playing the football. In actuality, he didn't touch the ball. It came very, very close. He almost did a do-si-do around the football, and it continued into the BC goal. So I believe that either the spotter or Craig Dickinson or Chris Jones saw that it hadn't been touched and chose not to challenge. Having said that, let's talk a little bit about the rules associated with safety touch and what happens on plays like that. Had that ball have been touched by the BC player, the question that the officials need to ask themselves is, did the BC player put additional momentum or change the direction of the football to put it into his own goal? We always say to ourselves in short form, who put the ball in goal? And in this case, even if he had touched that ball, we would have ruled that it was the kick that put the ball into the BC goal. So the best that could have happened for the Eskimos, well, the best would have been if it had been touched, it was a live ball and they could have fallen on it for a touchdown. But since the BC guy didn't touch it, he didn't scramble back there quickly. He allowed the Eskimos to invade slightly. They got called for no yards. Now, BC has a choice to make. Are they going to accept that no yards penalty applied from the 10-yard line, first down at the 15? Or do they want the comfort of an additional 20 yards for the cost of a point? And they chose to give up the point to Edmonton scrimmage first down on their 35. So, interesting strategy and interesting question, too, because we're always scrambling on the field to figure out who does what, and et cetera. We have to put ourselves into the best position to be able to observe what goes on. Similarly, we have to make a similar kind of decision when you have a punt caught in the air with the returner. Sometimes they just lose their sense of direction. They kind of, bobble around a little bit, and maybe they've caught it on the two and then slip out on the sideline inside the goal area. And generally speaking, what we would rule in those cases, that his forward momentum had him at the 2-yard line, so it's first on the two, and we're not going to award a safety touch on that. We want to see the guy catch the ball and turn around and make a clear and, let's use the word, stupid effort of taking the ball back into his own goal.
So just having the ball, so he'd have to take it back in the end zone. But if that ball had just even just touched like one thread on his glove or pant leg and goes in the end zone, the Eskimos recover it, that's a touchdown for the Eskimos.
That's right, because on a kick from scrimmage, once the ball touches any player, that is deemed possession, and the ball is now a live ball, and Edmonton could have scored a touchdown on it.
Bud Steen joins us inside the stripes, brought to you by Mobile One. Now, I want to get more into, we're down to the final 2 weeks of the season, Bud, and I know you made a cut down with the officials just right after Labor Day. Has that shrunk again now, or will it shrink come playoff time?
It will most likely shrink at playoff time. We made the adjustments that we felt necessary to take us through to the end of the season. What the decision was, though, was that some of the guys that continued to work through the last 4 weeks of the year would get less rotation than some of the other officials that were doing a better job. So it may just turn out that we lose some officials only because they got their games in the front end of the four batch rather than spread out over the four games. So it is possible that some of the guys could find themselves done. We are, though, doing a lot of talk about where we're going with the playoffs, and we're starting to get some pretty clear pictures of where guys are lining up. And it's quite interesting when you analyze the numbers, because it could be as little as one or two calls made or not made that makes the difference for an official whether he's working in the playoffs or not. It's really that fine of a point over guys that have worked 15, 16, 17 football games.
So you get into the final few weeks of the season, and you miss a call there, and you haven't missed one all year long, let's say. Does that count against you even more than the guy who missed one early on in the season?
As was said to me, one very eventful telephone call, buddy, timing is everything. I made an error late in the season, and it is telling. Teams have memories, but they're not real long, and you can make mistakes in June and get away with them, so to speak. But you make a serious mistake at the end of October, and buddy, watch out! It's going to haunt you. It's going to haunt you.
So with the officials knowing that, do you find? And this might be a tough question because, you know, we always hear that players sometimes play tight. Can you tell when you're watching an official is officiating the game tight? Like scared to make a mistake?
Yeah, I can tell it, but there's very little that I can do to assist or coach the fellow away from it recurring. It's much like being a player. It's all about routine. And when I was crew chief, I did my very best to establish the same routine for every game in the season. We would have breakfast at the same time. We would meet at the same time. Our agenda for the meeting would be the same. We would cover the same sorts of things. I allowed the class clowns in the meeting to have their fun so that we kept things as light as we could so that guys didn't get too amped up. When we would have our lunch at the same time, our nap at the same time, go to the park at the same time, do the same stuff at the park so that the games appeared to be the same. And then it's just how you personally can handle the pressure. Certainly, if you've never worked a Western final, if you've never worked a final in the Canadian Football League, you're going to be a little bit tight, no question about it. But the senior guys on the crew can help you relax a bit and just get you ready. And then as an official, what you want is right off the bat, right in your face, something big. You want them to throw a pass at the sideline where you got a toe drag in or something like that, or you've got a penalty that you're calling right off the top, because it's just like, you know, just like a goalie taking a hard shot early in a game. All right, now I'm in it. I'm good. My feet are under me and I'm on my way.
Is there one, and I've never asked this question, you officiate a lot of different positions. Do you think there is one position on the field as a CFL official that is the most difficult?
Right now, I think it's the line of scrimmage, because the method at which...
So that's the line judge?
Yeah, the line judge and the head linesman.
Okay.
The method of the receivers attacking the line of scrimmage now, those guys are challenging the line of scrimmage officials virtually every single play. And we've added a lot of responsibility to those fellows this year because we've moved the umpire into the offensive backfield. And so we're now asking the sideline guys to reach further into the middle of the field and make decisions on those low passes where either the quarterback is throwing it low so that the receivers, or the defenders can't get to it, or they're under pressure. And before, the umpire would spin on those and in many cases nail the decision. Now that's got to come from the line of scrimmage. So I would say it's them. And looking at their scores, an acceptable score for the line of scrimmage would put you mid-pack everywhere else.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Bud, we will chat with you next Tuesday, and we'll be into the final week of the season. Well, I guess the final week of the regular season for the Eskimos. But there's still lots on the line in the Eastern Conference. There is first place on the line in the West, and still a playoff berth as teams seem to want to lose their way into the final playoff spot in the West.
It's going to be very interesting to see what happens. You know, right now, hard to say who's going to be playing. BC, that's a tough football club, and if they get in, who knows what could happen. It could be very, very interesting come middle of November around here.
Well, I guess they have the advantage over Winnipeg because they play three games and Winnipeg plays two, as does Montreal, who still has a chance in the crossover.
Yeah, that's right. BC's playing Calgary, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a couple of times. And so they're going to be hard-pressed. But who knows? They might be playing them 3 weeks in a row. So it's going to be interesting.
Could you imagine that?
It'd be a big hate on...
BC's got Hamilton this weekend. And Calgary has the bye this week. Montreal and is taking on Toronto. Winnipeg obviously needs a win over Ottawa. And then Winnipeg takes on Toronto in the final week of the season for them. And which brings me up to my point again. The CFL really needs to look at having a floating bye week. You cannot have a team finish first and then have two bye weeks before they host. That just, to me, it can't happen. And you've got the opportunity to have floating bye weeks when Saskatchewan and Edmonton and Calgary and Hamilton and Ottawa, they're all their main tenants. Montreal, you can't tell me that you couldn't move, a bye week of one of those two teams. It wouldn't be a lot of these teams are playing one another. And you would know, like we knew 2 weeks ago Saskatchewan was out, right? You could have found a way to move things around. You know, Saskatchewan had the bye week in week 17. I think you could have pushed that bye week to week 20 and, switched it around for the Eskimos or something.
Interesting concept.
Yeah, I just think it would be much better off for everyone involved.
Sure, sure. No question. I mean, having the Eskimos sit for 21 days,
that could be brutal.
That could be tough, exactly. And the guys are already talking about it. They're already making their plans. I'm hearing from the inside that virtually to a man, everyone's staying in Edmonton. No one's going home.
You do not. Yeah, you don't want to get them, I think, out of the mindset of playoffs.
Exactly.
That wouldn't be good. But we'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Right on. Thanks a lot.